All right, I'm also your first speaker. I'm Lynn Geddes. I'm from the University of Florida. I'm based in Fort Lauderdale, but I'm also affiliated with the Center for Aquatic and Invasive Plants in Gainesville. And I'll be talking about invasion pathways for aquatic invasive species, case studies from Florida. Florida's waters are particularly susceptible to invasion from plants that come from other places because our waters tend to be shallow, they tend to be warm year-round, and they tend to be nutrient-rich. We're one of the largest phosphorus sources in the world. We mine phosphorus in Florida. This drives algae production, but it also fosters plant growth, so we have lots of invasive aquatic species. The big question is, how do they get there? We do have documentation of one species that probably came in on hurricane winds. I'll talk about that a little bit later. It's pretty uncommon, though. Mother Nature also helps bring these invasive species in through birds and other critters. Also fairly uncommon. They typically aren't bringing these in, but rather they're spreading them once they're here. So here we've got a robin on Brazilian pepper. The most common method of introduction from plants that are already here is accidental. So this is a boat trailer. Does the arrow show up when I do that? Yes, okay. So on this boat trailer, there's a number of invasive species. There's some water hyacinth on here, there's some water lettuce, and a number of other species. So this person has launched their boat in a lake that clearly has invasive species already. And they're out doing their thing, cruising around on that boat. If they don't clean their boat and trailer before they go launch into a new system, they're going to transfer the propagules from this trailer and boat to that other system and foster spread of these invasive species. The very most common way that plants get here is us. Water hyacinth is a noxious weed, People still sell it at farmers markets and garage sales and swap shops and that sort of thing. So here's a hyacinth for sale for $6. Excuse me. And aquarium dumps are also a very common source for the spread of aquatic species, particularly submersed weeds. Now, we did stage this photo. We didn't actually catch this boy dumping his aquarium, but this is a very common way that submersed weeds get into Florida's water. Sort of a telltale sign this has happened is when you have fluorescent gravel on the border of the pond. Fluorescent gravel does not occur in nature, but it occurs quite a bit in aquariums. So this is a big vector for spreading aquatic invasive species. As far as getting the plants in the first place, there are aquarium dealers everywhere, and this is probably sort of hard to read, but this is an aquarium pack that's for sale on the internet. Down here we have Hydrilla verticillata. This is one of the world's 100 worst weeds. It is Florida's most intensively managed submersed weed, but here you go, you can buy it. Up here we have Hygrophila. This is a state-listed noxious weed. Now, there are a couple native plants in here, too, but somebody buys this on the internet, plants it in their aquarium. It grows really well because that's what these weeds do. They dump it into the water in their HOA or the closest lake or canal, and there we go. We've got a new introduction. It's not limited to submersed plants. We've got water hyacinths for sale here as well. Rotala is one of our newest weeds in Florida. It's not state listed, it's not federally listed, but this is one of our newest invaders that's sold very commonly as a water garden and an aquarium plant. It's very pretty. So in its emergent form, you see these really beautiful hot pink flower spikes. And it's a great oxygenator, of course. It looks very different under its submersed conditions, but it's sold for aquariums as well. So we've got sort of a double hit with Rotala. It's not good. It's a very bad plant. It's close relative of purple loosestrife, so if you're familiar with that plant, this is in the same family. There's no regulation on this species, and it's actually becoming one of our worst submersed weeds in South Florida. It's clogging the canals, and they can't move water during tropical events, which is a problem. Another problem with buying plants from dealers online is contamination. So here we have Pet Solutions, and I'm not picking on anybody. There are many, many aquarium and water plant dealers out there, but this is just a good example. They're selling duckweed. Okay, duckweed's native. That's okay. This is salvinia in here, along with the duckweed. So the smaller plants are, in fact, duckweed, but if you order duckweed from this company, you're going to end up with salvinia minima as well, common salvinia, which is a federally listed noxious weed. So we've got accidental contamination of a native plant. This is very common as well. Our sources aren't just restricted to dealers. We've got hobbyists as well that are selling plants. This is red root floater being sold on eBay. South Florida, as far as I know, is the only place that has a problem with this particular plant. It's invaded the Peace River. They're having a hard time keeping it under control because it's a little floating plant. So some of the plants always escape treatments and repopulate pretty quickly. So we've got a couple different sources. You know, we've got Craigslist, we've got eBay, and then we've got ads like this on Craigslist. So they're selling this nice small plastic pond with water plants. Yay, fish and fountains. Water hyacinths down here. Water hyacinths over here. The public typically does not know these plants are problematic, so they don't realize that they're actually breaking the law when they sell these plants. Oops, what did I do? Wrong way. There we go. So let's talk about some of our plants in South Florida that are problematic. Water hyacinth was introduced in the 1880s. Its Latin name is Icornia crassipes. It's a beautiful plant. You can see why we brought it in. This was intentionally introduced. The sort of folklore is that these were given away as souvenirs at the Southern States Cotton Expo in New Orleans in the 1880s. And they were taken back to Florida by a Florida resident who put them in their little water garden in their backyard. The plants grew really well, of course, because that's what water hyacinth does. And once the plants overtook that pond, that resident decided to share water hyacinth with the other people in Florida because it was so very pretty. So they put their extra plants in the closest body of water, which was the St. John's River. This is the main shipping lane through Florida at that point. That was how we moved goods, produce, people, livestock, everything. Within 10 years of that introduction into the St. John's was impassable, so we were unable to actually transport anything, and it remained that way for about 50 years. This is its typical situation in Florida. Forms very, very dense populations. It impedes light penetration into the water column. It tends to shade out the native submersed plants, and it is impossible to get an outboard motor through this. You can get an airboat through a population of hyacinth like this, but most people don't have airboats. It was originally controlled strictly via mechanical harvesting, but unfortunately the plant grows so fast they can't stay on top of it. Luckily, we do now have herbicides that work on this species, so the first one was 2,4-D, introduced in the 40s, and that was when they finally were able to clear the St. John's again to the point that they could use it for shipping. Up until that time, they just did mechanical harvesting, and you can't get the plants out faster than they can grow, so it was a losing battle. Our next obnoxious weed in Florida is alligator weed. This is Alternanthera phylloxeroides. It was introduced in the 1890s. It's characterized by this papery white flower. This is actually an accidental introduction. So we think this came in ballast water, which is pretty unusual. It forms extremely dense populations. This is sort of an all-terrain plant, so it grows submersed and it also grows as an emergent plant. Fortunately, we have a biocontrol critter now. We have an insect, the alligator weed flea beetle, that is host-specific on this particular weed, and it's doing such a good job that we're to the point that we actually don't spray many of our populations of alligator weed anymore because the bug does enough damage that it's a good thing. Oops. Our next weed is hydrilla. This was introduced in the 1950s. Its Latin name is Hydrilla verticillata, and the verticillata describes the leaf arrangement. So the leaves are in whorls of 5 to 8 around the stem. Pretty little plant, great oxygenator. This is one that we actually introduced as an aquarium plant. Initially, the aquarium growers said, yeah, we don't need this. We've got, you know, Egeria densa, and that's fine, and we'll just keep growing that. So one of the canal dealers, or one of the aquarium dealers that got a shipment of these plants, just threw them in a canal near their farm and let Mother Nature grow them. And that did so well that they did that more. So aquarium dealers intentionally put hydrilla in the canals and bodies of water around their nurseries, so when a customer wanted a good oxygenator, they could just grow out and grab a handful and ship it. This is our most intensively managed submersed weed in Florida. This is a huge problem. It forms extremely dense populations. This is a canopy of hydrilla, so it reaches the surface of the water and tops out and starts laying on the surface of the water. This impedes light penetration, oxygen penetration. It raises the temperature near the surface of the water. It is terrible habitat. Fortunately, we do have herbicides that work on hydrilla, but our sort of go-to product that we've used for, well, since the 80s, Floridone, is no longer effective on most hydrilla populations because they have developed resistance to Floridone. That's a whole nother story. the hydrilla in Florida is a female biotype, so we don't have any pollen source in Florida, and they figured that we were completely safe with resistance in this species because there's no genetic recombination. This is a weird plant. It's a mixoploid, so one plant will have diploid shoots, triploid shoots, tetraploid shoots, pentaploid shoots. It's a freak. But it strictly reproduces by vegetative means in Florida, so we didn't think it would ever become resistant to anything, but it did because it's very clever. Another one of our weeds is Hygrophila. This is Hygrophila polysperma, introduced in the 1950s. Not really grown for its flower. It's not a spectacular flower. It's quite small. Then we've got a pencil tip there for scale. This was introduced as an aquarium plant. Again, a good oxygenator. It grows submersed and emergent, so it's on banks and it's underwater too. Forms very dense populations. It's not as bad as hydrilla. But it definitely impedes navigation. It blocks light penetration and oxygen penetration into the water column. Forms, yeah, quite dense populations. Here we have an outboard trying to get through this topped out infestation of Hygrophila. For a very long time, we really didn't have anything that did a good job controlling Hygrophila, but fortunately we have a new herbicide that was just labeled a few years ago that actually knocks the daylights out of it, so we're very happy about that. Next, we have Crested Floating Heart, and I'm going to skim over a lot of this because our next speaker will be doing a presentation on this species. But very briefly, this is Nymphoides cristata, first found in Florida in the 90s and 2000s. Very attractive little plant, water garden plant, introduced intentionally. I'm not going to steal Carl's thunder, so I'm just going to say, look at the pictures, because Carl's going to tell you all about how to identify it and its morphological characteristics and all of that. Our next weed is giant salvinia, also called Kariba weed, first found in Florida in the 1990s. This is Salvinia molesta. It is a federally listed noxious weed. So it has roots that just dangle down in the water column. This is a floating plant, so it doesn't grow underwater. This was introduced as an aquarium plant. Super. It's fairly large for our smaller floating plants, and it is a true fern, so it reproduces by spores, not seeds. It doesn't flower or anything like that. It forms extremely dense surface populations. This weed has been present in Florida, Texas, and Louisiana for quite a while. And Louisiana, about 5 years ago, had a sudden explosion of the growth of this species. It's been mostly manageable in those three states up until about 5 years ago. This picture was actually taken here in Louisiana by Dr. Chris Mudge, who's co-hosting the tour tomorrow. And so they've just had this explosion. They don't know what's driving it, but we expect the same thing to happen in Florida very soon. These small floating plants are difficult to control because they can escape the treatment. They can float away and become stranded. And if you get 98% of the plants killed, that's not good enough because that 2% will quickly repopulate and reinfest that system. Our next aquatic weed is Rotala, Rotala rotundifolia. This was first found in a canal in South Florida in 2006. This is a close relative of purple loosestrife, and you could tell that by the flower. This was intentionally introduced as a water garden and aquarium plant, so this is the one I talked about earlier. In its emergent form, it has these very pretty bright green leaves, typically has a hot pink stem, although that can be a little bit variable. It makes a really nice population when it's flowering along the borders of ponds and water gardens, so people plant it as a marginal plant. But the problem is it gets in our canals. So this is one of our flood control canals, and there's actually about 6 feet of water under what you see there. This isn't a dry ditch with a puddle on it. There's 6 feet of water. So the Rotala has completely filled the water column, and now it's topping out and flowering. It is very difficult to kill. The herbicides that we have that are effective on it have onerous irrigation restrictions. And most of our canals are located by farms, and people irrigate out of them, so that's a problem. Here's its submersed form. Oops, sorry. So this is sort of a new population. It establishes submersed first and sort of hangs out for a couple of years, and then something triggers it to explode. It tops out, it flowers, and it's a serious problem. It reproduces easily by fragments. We don't know much about the seeds of this species, but even small fragments will root and form new plants very quickly and very easily. Our next weed is feathered mosquito fern. This was first found in Florida in 2007. This is Azolla pinnata. This is closely related to our native mosquito fern, Azolla caroliniana. It's much larger than our native mosquito fern, and it is triangular in shape, as you can sort of get a feel for from these pictures. This was also introduced through the aquarium industry. It forms very dense surface populations, and as with our other floating species, it blocks light penetration, oxygen penetration, raises temperatures, shades out the submersed native plants. Our next plant is tropical American watergrass. This was first found in Florida in 2007. It's Luseola subintegra. It was the first report of this plant in the country. And this is the one that we actually think came in on hurricane winds. There's no other good way for it to have gotten here. So the other species that we've talked about, for the most part, have had some sort of redeeming characteristic. You know, they're ornamental, they're attractive. Luseola has no redeeming characteristics. Most of our grasses have been brought in as forage. This is not a good forage. So we're pretty sure that it came in on hurricane winds. It has separate male and female flowers on the same plant. So the male flowers are erect. You can see the yellow pollen. The female flowers are dipping and they bend down toward the surface of the water. We don't know much about the seed biology in this plant, but we do know it has spread very easily by fragmentation from a contaminated site to a clean site, and it appears to have been transferred via equipment because the only connection between those sites is the same contractor worked on both of those sites. So we are pretty sure it was spread from the first infested site to the second via contaminated equipment with plant fragments. It grows as a submersed plant, as you see here, and in its immature form, it makes surface mats that float on the surface of the water, and then as it matures, it makes erect growth like you see here, so it gets up to 2 or 3 feet tall. Fortunately, right now, this is fairly isolated, but it's in some ecologically sensitive areas. It's in parts of the Everglades, and basically, they find Luseola, they smoke it, because this is a bad, bad plant. Our next plant is red root floater, first found in Florida in 2010. This is Phyllanthus fluitans. This is the one I mentioned earlier. We can get it from aquarium dealers or water garden dealers. It's not listed by anybody. It's a very attractive little plant, and since it is widely sold as an aquarium plant, it was introduced intentionally by us, probably through an aquarium dump. Now you can see why you'd want this in an aquarium. It has very pretty red roots that dangle down in the water column, but it forms very dense populations very quickly. It does make seeds. Again, we don't know much about the biology of the seeds. A lot of these species are sort of like orphan diseases. There's not really any money to fund research on them. And they're so isolated, primarily in South Florida, that trying to do any research on the biology can be challenging because you just can't get funding. So as far as importance as vectors for the introductions of these plants, we look at our aquarium dumps and that sort of thing. We've got water hyacinth, hydrilla, hygrophila, crested floating heart, giant salvinia, feathered mosquito fern, rotala, red root floater. So these are the ones that we have put in Florida's waters. Alligator weed came in, we think, accidentally as a ballast water contaminant. So we've got one accidental there, and we've got one that we think was introduced on hurricane winds. So the take-home message here is, it's us. We are the enemy. We're the ones bringing these plants in. And I know Clara later will be talking about doing evaluations on plants that are brought into states to determine how bad they are. It's really important to do that. Once we bring in a plant, we have to make sure it doesn't get out in the ecosystem because we don't know what they're going to do for the most part. And that's it for me. Does anybody have questions?